Hello, everybody. Welcome to this new edition of The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin, alongside Arpin Basu, as usual. My friend, have a good and amazing Friday. Yeah, no, that's okay. You can stay like that. That's okay. I can keep on going. You don't have to comment on me greeting you. That's all right.
I am having a great and amazing Friday so far. But yeah, with the games coming fast and furious, obviously, I look at days as game days and non-game days. Today being a game day, Fridays and Mondays and Saturdays and Sundays don't really register with me. So that's why I was taken aback, because there's two days in the week to me. There's game day and not game day.
That's right.
So today's a game day.
Yeah, it is. It is. So obviously the Canadians we're recording this a few hours before the Canadians are hosting the Winnipeg Jets. But today, you know, if we just take a step back and look at the playoff hunt and look at the Canadiens performing down the stretch, we're going to take a look today at the likelihood of them making the playoffs or not. And also we'll wonder, is there something that the Canadiens are learning about themselves that we learn about the Canadiens? Well, with all of those players that are out with injuries right now, I think they're piling up, with obviously Carey Price being out, Brendan Gallagher, now Jonathan Drouin. Up front, you've got also Paul Byron, Tomáš Tatar, who's not there, and a few banged up guys also on defense that represent probable or doubtful cases on the blue line, but we might see some changes tonight. But clearly, we're far removed from that healthy lineup from not so long ago, before they went on that crazy stretch. So we're going to take a look at that. Obviously, as usual, we're going to have our Heritage Minute, take a look at what's going on in other Canadians' market. And as usual, we're very happy to have our listeners sending us their questions through our voicemail. So this is always fun to answer those questions. So for those of you who would be interested in sending us a voicemail, don't forget to do it by calling 424-703-3859. That's 424-703-3859. We might just be airing your question on our podcast and then answering it. So without further ado, Arpin, I'd like to have your overall take on where this is all going. It seems as though the Canadians are unraveling with their current streak, but how significant is the threat of seeing the Calgary Flames catching up with them at this point?
I guess it's somewhat significant in the sense that Calgary's schedule almost has too much rest built into it. Canadian schedule obviously has no rest built into it, so the likelihood of the Flames catching the Canadians, I think, is pretty slim. You know, the Flames, aside from the Canadians, haven't played all that well. I mean, you could look at the Canadians' record and take out the games against Vancouver and maybe Edmonton, and then they look like a pretty average to below average team. Well, if you took the Calgary Flames' record and took out their games against Montreal, they also look like a pretty average to below average team. So, they got a big win against Edmonton last night to lessen that gap to 4 points. The Canadians have their destiny in their hands, to use that brutal cliche, but it's true. I mean, if they go out and win a couple of games here, they can lock into that fourth spot relatively quickly. And frankly, if the Jets keep sliding, then who knows, maybe they can even climb into a third spot, which, considering how well the Canadiens have played against the Oilers this year, should be a pretty strong motivating factor for them to try and get into that third spot and face the Oilers in the first round. But, you know, I think there's an overall way to look at the Canadiens in the sense that they have not played well for quite some time. Their consistency is non-existent. And they have a lot of trouble generating offense. But, you know, what strikes me about this team is that I think from day one, even before day one, from the offseason, it became clear that Marc Bergevin's goal was to build a team that was playoff ready, that was going to have its success in the playoffs. It sort of was the underlying theme of every acquisition he made, you know, adding cup winners, filling specific roles that he felt were missing. Toffoli as a goal scorer, Anderson as a power forward, Jake Allen to have Price ready to go and rested in the playoffs, which now he's going to be rested kind of for a bad reason. But, and you know, watching how Weber and Sherratt played in the bubble, adding Edmondson as a cup winner and as another rugged defenseman that is probably better suited to playoff style hockey than regular season style hockey. Well,
and even John Merrill to that extent, we could
even John Merrill. Absolutely. Yeah. Like that's a double down on the way the Canadiens defense is built. So I think overall they have to start showing that kind of now or soon, in the sense that, you know, they need to lock up that spot for a number of reasons, but just for their own state of mind and confidence and what have you. It's not a very confident group right now. So that game in Edmonton prior to the series in Calgary was an example of what this team could look like when it's playing at its best and playing a playoff style of hockey. They were extremely physical and just dominated the puck battles in that game. And that's what this team is kind of built to do. And it's not what they have done consistently. So I think, you know, there's a disconnect between the playoff style team that we thought they had tried to build and the team we've seen for most of the regular season. Are they going to be able to just flip a switch when the playoffs start? I mean, maybe, but it would be high time to kind of see some of those playoff qualities come out now that the games are starting to transition towards more of a playoff style of hockey.
Yeah, because it's not just a matter of the way the game is officiated differently. I mean, that's true that in the playoffs, there's still to this day more clutching and grabbing. And you know, we were talking with Hal Gill for an article for our notebook last week, and he was mentioning, you know, he said it. To a certain extent, even today, not only just in my era, back in the day when I was, you know, when I was playing and you know, upping my level of play in the playoffs, but even today, Al Gill's read is that if as a defenseman you have your position on the opponent and you're not making up ground, but you're already there, the refs will let you battle more and let the two guys hit each other basically. And there'll be more holding and stuff like that. More that are physical abuse or physical penalties that will be, they'll give you more leeway to work with that more than stick fouls. So I understand that part of it, but there's also executing that style of play and making sure that when game one of the playoffs start, that however you want to play, you're going to be fine-tuned for that. And what I'm concerned with is to see how you use the term disconnected. This team is really not connected at this point, and it's getting pretty late in the season. With under 10 games to go, it's scary to think that they have they're so far in terms of miscommunications, in terms of not being able to find each other on the ice. So no, it's not a switch that you can just turn on the eves of the playoffs, because it's one thing to say, okay, well, we got a big and imposing defense that's going to punish the opponent and they're going to have a hard time when they get in our zone. Well, you got to be able to catch those guys and you got to be able to apply that pressure. And right now, it's not happening on a consistent basis. We saw the other night against the Toronto Maple Leafs, we saw Josh Anderson being a real bulldozer all over the ice. If there was one guy that was causing trouble to the Maple Leafs, it was Josh Anderson. He was the one wrecking havoc, and the Leafs didn't want to have anything to do with him. But as for the Leafs entering the Canadian zone and saying, oh, we're going to be punished, we're going to have a hard time, I didn't really see it. And we certainly don't see it often enough. We saw it in Edmonton, sure, but we don't see it enough.
No, I think one thing that we saw from that Leafs game was the Canadians making a concerted effort to run it at Matthews a little bit. I think Weber took a couple of shots at him. Anderson definitely wanted to get a lick on him, never managed to do it. Because there was at least three occasions in the first period where Matthews got rid of the puck and spun away from Anderson as he was charging towards him. But it is, I think there was some emphasis placed on that to sort of, because they're going to play, they have three more games left in the Leafs, against the Leafs, in the next week and change. So, you know, I think there was definitely a message sending aspect to that game that they didn't probably deliver, but I think the intent was there. And that's going to be an interesting part of these games against the Leafs. Like, as if it becomes more evident that the Canadiens are locked into fourth, and quite frankly, that is the likeliest outcome here, is that the Canadiens will finish fourth and they will face the Maple Leafs in the playoffs for the first time since 1979. These games coming up against the Maple Leafs would suddenly take on a greater importance than you would think they would, since both teams are locked into their positions. But it's a chance to set up what might happen in the playoffs. And you know, you talk about Anderson. You know, I was talking to his dad for our notebook last week about, you know, his big night in Calgary, how well he played and kind of delivered when he needed to deliver. Or was that Edmonton? Might have been Edmonton. It was Edmonton, actually. So, and how he kind of talked the talk in the morning and then delivered that night in the game. But one thing that I mentioned to his dad, Gary, who's a Montreal native, was the quote from Steve Yzerman the year the Columbus Blue Jackets swept the Lightning in the playoffs, and how he said that the Lightning did not have an answer for Josh Anderson, even though if you look at Anderson's numbers from that series, didn't really put up huge offensive numbers. That's not what Yzerman was referring to. And we've heard that quote before. That's nothing new. But then when I mentioned it to his dad, it was funny. He was just like, that is probably the proudest quote I have about my son in all his years of playing hockey, just because it came from Steve Yzerman. You know, it was the content of the message, but it was also the guy it came from, a guy who was, you know, was not a power forward, but was a warrior in the playoffs and played injured and did all sorts of heroic things in playoff time. To hear him say that about his son really filled him with a great deal of pride. And we're starting to see some of what Steve Yzerman was talking about in Josh Anderson's game now, that he's a guy who I think has an acute understanding of the cumulative effect that he can have on opposing players, you know, finishing hits, forechecking that much harder, like just a little bit harder, skating a little bit harder, you know, doing everything at a bit of a more intense level. I think he's hit a certain level that his teammates haven't, and they would do well to watch him and sort of be like, okay, it is getting to that time of year where I have to approach these games like this guy is. Cause, you know, I think the Canadiens' effort, I don't think, can be really questioned. It's really a matter of execution. But there's a certain level of intensity that I think a lot of Anderson's teammates are lacking when compared to him. Yeah. And it would behoove them, especially since the execution is not on point, that they can make up for that if everyone upped their intensity a little tiny bit, like Josh Anderson has in the last few games.
Yeah, I agree with that. Except he acknowledged himself after that game against Toronto that style of hockey that he played that night is not something that's sustainable night after night, because it's such a demanding brand of hockey. So you got to have other guys that will do the same, each in their own way, but that they're going to be able to pick up the slack so that consistently you have guys that are playing that way. If that's really what's asked of them, I mean, they're not. Not all the Canadians have the power forward tools that Anderson have. I understand that. But you talk about the level of intensity. I think that's where I'm concerned. I understand that statistically, the likely scenario is the Canadiens coming out, you know, in the fourth spot and earning that playoff berth. But at the same time, their lack of consistency is so striking. They've won only 5 of their last 15 games. So the onus is on the Flames to play better than they have and take that opportunity to really make up ground and, you know, and pass the Canadiens. But there's nothing that I see in the Canadiens right now, and I don't want to be all doom and gloom, but I don't see much in the Canadiens right now that tells me that all of a sudden that rhythm of winning one game out of 3 is about to change anytime soon, with or without Josh Anderson.
Well, okay. Well, I'll do the counter to that. You know, let's say they finish 4th. Let's say they face the Leafs. And let's say that becomes clear in the next 2 or 3 days, 4 days, let's say. I think there are a number of reasons why it's not unreasonable to believe that the Canadiens could be a different version of themselves in the playoffs. You would think, or I think they would expect, that the playoff experience that they acquired would start to shine through at this point. You know, Corey Perry was asked about it Friday morning and he didn't really have an answer for it. It was just kind of like, well, you just have to use it when it comes to experience and how it can benefit. You know, they just have to go out and play like they know playoff hockey is played. You know, I mean, Corey Perry is a guy whose style is perfectly suited for the playoffs, went from being a pretty marginal fourth liner for Dallas last year into a very effective fourth liner for them in the playoffs last year. Eric Staal's kind of the same deal, you know, in terms of protecting the puck possession, and when the game itself, I don't want to say it slows down, but it becomes a little bit more bogged down with more physical play and a bit more tolerance for some of the obstruction that goes on. Maybe that could help him, but primarily, you know, the return of Brendan Gallagher, the loss of Brendan Gallagher has been a huge factor to me in how the Canadiens have played since he's been gone, because they're not the same team at all.
No.
So him returning, you would think, would create a trickle down effect throughout the lineup that would really benefit them. It would allow Dominique Ducharme to put the, you know, the Tatar, Danault, Gallagher line back together. And you know, everyone would get bumped down into slots that they're more accustomed to. You know, you could have an offensive guy playing on a third line with Jesperi Kotkaniemi if that's the case. You know, and then who knows, Jonathan Drouin, we don't know what's going on with him, but if he comes back after 24 days or 10 games, you know, once those two thresholds are met for his long-term injured reserve status, maybe a refreshed Jonathan Drouin could help them at that point. I think if they're locked into their situation, I don't know if they will do it, but Dominique Ducharme should use that situation to start resting some of his defensemen. Sit Shea Weber for a game or two down the stretch. Sit Jeff Petrie for a game or two down the stretch. You know, those two games against Edmonton at the end of the season, if they're basically meaningless, I think there's an opportunity there, at least on defense. So at forward, you know, I don't think they have much wiggle room in terms of messing with their lineup. But on defense, they do, at least as it currently stands. So they should also take advantage of that and then see if a healthy Carey Price looks all refreshed. And, you know, I mean, I had a conversation with a scout about this very topic, about how this team was built for the playoffs. And I was expecting his first thing to be like, yeah, look at Edmondson and look at Anderson and look at all these big, tough defense. His first response was, well, yeah, Carey Price.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of taken aback and I was like, what do you mean? Yeah, Carey Price. I was like, well, you know, Carey Price is going to be good in the playoffs. He's always good in the playoffs. And I was like, well, no, he's not always. But then you look at it and frankly, he's right. He is most of the time. He's been excellent in the playoffs. He just hasn't played in the playoffs all that often. So I think there's a lot there. I don't know how much of that is realistic to expect, but I think there are factors in the Canadiens' favor that suggest that this will be a different team come playoff time, not only because it's playoff time, but also because of some bodies that, for their sake, hopefully will be back healthy and playing by the time the playoffs begin.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with that. When you said I'm going to counter or bring a new perspective, I agree with what you said. I still believe that this team is better suited for the playoffs, and it was built that way. If we get there, as odds suggest they will, it's not going to be pretty. There might be some nights where you're going to say, heck, is this 2002 again? Because that old school defense, first and foremost, I think will be more efficient in that role, as we've seen in the bubble. And I think that Marc Bergevin really doubled down and put all his eggs in that basket heading into this season. But my concern was more, is it that obvious that they're going to make it? You know, because if they play for 500, it should be okay. Well, it should at this point. It would be neat if they played for 500. That's the only part that I'm not sure of. And the other thing is, I mean, they've got so many guys that are banged up that their depth is really tested. And since the trade deadline, you know, with all the shenanigans around the salary cap, around the recalls, regular recalls, emergency recalls, and whatnot, that depth has really been tested. And I think it's interesting to see that, you know, the Canadiens have worked really hard at making sure that they would have all that depth built and available to them, and in the crunch time, they're not really able to use it. So they have to turn to a guy like Mikhail Frolik, who's, I mean, he's a great guy, but you can see by watching him on the ice that he hasn't played at all this year, because he's sort of skating in butter a little bit. You know, he should be a faster skater than that, but he's just not accustomed to game shape anymore. Now, I won't blame him for that. And, you know, they went to get Eric Staal to bring an improvement over Jake Evans. Well, heck, next thing we see is that Jake Evans is definitely proving to be a better player than Eric Staal at this point in his career. So it's probably a good thing to have the younger legs and the quote unquote prospect guy being the more effective player, because I think that they're going to be able to count on Jake Evans going forward. But in the meantime, I find that this team is really tested up front. And you take just taking Tomáš Tatar out of the equation, not to mention Drouin and Gallagher, yes, but just lately in the last few days, just taking Tatar out of the equation, and you add to that Gallagher, those guys not being in your lineup, it makes all the difference in the world.
Well, yeah, you've taken out, you know, they've lost more than a full forward line's worth of forwards, right? I mean, Byron being added to that list, let's see what happens tonight in the game. But, you know, just on the depth thing, is that that's something they will have in the playoffs. Like, all these restrictions are removed. So there's no salary cap. There's no call-up limit. There's no nothing. There's no roster limit. There's no nothing. So at that point, if they get to the playoffs, Dominique Ducharme's going to have a lot of options in terms of what he wants to do with his lineup. I would imagine if the Canadiens are fully healthy, you know, he'd probably have Cole Caulfield sitting on the sidelines at that point. You know, I don't think he would probably crack the lineup if it was fully healthy, but he would be an interesting option if you need to add a sort of just a power play weapon or just a weapon in general. If the goals aren't coming, that's there. You know, if Jake Evans doesn't manage to crack the lineup, he's an interesting option. They have lots of depth on defense because of everything they did on the at the trade deadline, creating options. You know, could be argued, you know, everything they did to add those defensemen is what created the situation that didn't allow them to tap into their depth during the rest of the regular season. But once you reach the playoffs and those limits are gone, then you can see the benefits of having those extra defensemen. So they're pretty well insulated from injury in terms of having, you know, very capable guys sitting out. If it happens to be Kulak, Gustafsson, and Xavier Ouellette as your ninth defenseman, you know, you're looking pretty good as far as 7, 8, 9. Like, that's a pretty good group of 7, 8, 9. You wouldn't want that to be 4, 5, 6, but 7, 8, 9, it's not bad. So, you know, there's all these.
Well, that's almost what it was in the bubble last summer. I mean,
well, that's exactly. I mean, you had Mete and Ouellette.
And Kulak. You know,
playing on their third pair.
Yeah.
And so it's the whole flipping of the switch thing that kind of has me wondering, but there really are a number of factors. Like, if you want to be an optimist, which I would not blame anyone for not wanting to be an optimist right now, but if there is an optimistic viewpoint on this, is that once they get to the playoffs, assuming they get there, it's not a given yet because they're playing like garbage. Let's call it what it is. They're playing terrible. So if they don't stop playing terrible and win a few games here, then the playoff spot is in some jeopardy, depending on what the Flames do. But assuming they reach the playoffs, which is still the likeliest scenario here, I think there are many factors that would lead me to believe that they will give Toronto, they will be a handful for Toronto. I'd be somewhat surprised if the Canadiens are healthy and the Maple Leafs are fully healthy, that the Canadiens would just lay down and get smoked by the Maple Leafs. I really don't think I'm not saying that they would necessarily win that series, but I think they could. I think it's possible. And I think either way, it would be a very hard-fought, long series.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Nets, I still think that they would have the advantage. As long as they would stay out of the box, 5-on-5, they could manage to, they could manage to contain Matthews and Marner. Traditionally against Montreal, I've always found that Alex Kerfoot plays very well against them. He missed a glorious 3-on-1 opportunity the other night, but generally speaking, he's a very effective player against them. We've seen John Tavares quite a bit against Montreal too, but I think that they have, if they can manage to limit the number of power play opportunities against the Leafs, they could be in decent shape. But in order to get there, the Canadiens have to work on their execution. And that's I'll call it a buzzword, but when it comes to commenting on losses after games, you know, whether it's the coach or the players, they often say, well, you know, we know what we have to do. It's been explained to us very clearly. We know what we got to do. It's a matter of executing. And it seems like this word, executing, is an umbrella for tons of stuff. What do you think goes into executing? How can you say, well, it's just a matter of execution? It's just one word, but it seems to mean so much because ultimately that's what the game is all about. You know what to do. It's just a matter of doing it. You know what I mean? I think that there's a lot that goes into that word of executing.
Well, I think the last game, you know, Ducharme kind of spelled it out, and he said it in French. He said, il faut qu'on soit aiguisé mentalement, you know, be mentally sharp. And this team's not mentally sharp right now. It's just not. And frankly, it's understandable. No one looked at the schedule coming out of their forced COVID break and said, oh, well, that should be easy. You know, I think everyone looked at it. Everything that's happening right now to the Canadiens was very predictable when that schedule came out.
Yeah.
What's happening? Injuries have started to pile up. Everyone thought that would happen. What's happening? Their slow, immobile defensemen are looking slower and more immobile. I think everyone expected that to happen. Their older players are struggling. Weber, Petrie, you know, even Perry to a certain extent. I mean, it's not easy, this schedule, the rhythm. And for sure, physically it's not easy, but mentally what's become clear is it's really not easy. And so the execution, I'll give you an example of execution. Okay. So what's been a theme over the last little while is Dominic Ducharme mentioning that they're unable to make a simple 5 or 10 foot pass, and it has nothing to do with skill because these are the best players in the world. It has to do with execution. It has to do with being mentally sharp. I took in practice at the Bell Center on Thursday, and the number of missed 5 to 10 foot passes in that practice, where there's no pressure, there's no opponent, there's no defender bugging you, was alarming. It was like, we've both seen thousands of NHL practices at this point. I don't even know how many. It happens where the team just doesn't look sharp in practice. But this was, for this time of year, was unusual to see how many guys were missing simple passes. At one point, Alex Burrows was doing a drill where there were two lines of forwards. They kind of skated hard into the neutral zone or around into in a semicircle, re-entered the zone, took a pass, and then in the slot, he had set up a glove on the ice, and there was a stick leaning on the glove, creating like a triangle. So whichever forward got the puck from Burrows had to pass it through that triangle to the other forward and for a shot on net. And it was done at a pretty high pace and whatever. The emphasis was on speed of execution. But I got to say, that glove and the stick in the slot was a pretty decent defender. Like, honestly, more often than you would think. Usually the guys got it through. But considering it's an inanimate object sitting in the slot, that stick and that glove won the battle more than you would think, like a handful of times, you know? So the execution, that's it, is that the team is not mentally sharp right now. And I think it's somewhat understandable. People would call it making an excuse, but it's a real excuse. It's real. No, and Ducharme said it quite eloquently. No NHL team has ever done what we are in the process of doing. No one has experience doing this. So I think when you say lack of execution, that's where it comes from. And it's understandable. It shouldn't be acceptable necessarily, but you can understand based on everything that's happened, why they find themselves in this situation. The schedule is not tenable. It's definitely not easy, but it could be argued that it's too difficult to realistically be able to maintain a certain level of play when playing at this pace for as long as the Canadians have been playing.
And further to that, I think that the players will try to look for energy and motivation wherever they can under those circumstances. I think that it's quite it's quite obvious, from one night to another, trying to come up with the same level of passion and determination. I mean, the will's always there, but sometimes just the legs might not follow, or even the brain won't follow what their heart would hope would happen. And in situations like these, that's when you start hearing players say, well, the empty buildings really affect us because we could get some energy off the crowd and playing, in front of empty seats all year round. It really doesn't help us in trying to pump some of that energy and some of that motivation on nights that where we were seeking it and where we know that we're shortchanged in that aspect. We've heard Philippe Danault saying it this week. We've heard Eric Staal mentioning it too. So what I did is that I went on another team. I went to ask head coach Peter DeBoer of the Vegas Golden Knights. The Golden Knights, obviously one of the powerhouses in the league, they've been very effective both at home and on the road at, aligning. I think they're in the midst of a franchise record winning streak at this point. And so for them, playing in front of empty seats has not been an issue at all.
And that building, it should be noted, that building is among the best atmospheres, game day atmospheres in the league, like the Vegas, T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah.
That crowd's a factor when you play in Vegas. Like, it is.
Exactly. So that's why I went to ask him, because I know that this is a place where home ice advantage mean something for these guys. So I said, well, what's the magic trick here? How come it hasn't been a disadvantage for you? Well, how have your players been able to deal with this situation?
Well, I think winning fixes a lot of those problems, Mark. I think if you're winning consistently, you're having fun coming to the rink. Guys are enjoying being around each other. I think when the mental fatigue sets in, it's always compounded by losing. You know, you're dragging that around, and so. We've had the fortune, we've won a lot of games, and a lot of times that gives you that mental energy, regardless of home, road, building full, empty. Guys are excited to play.
Yeah, and that's why I was, you know, I've been curious about this. And I think we did ask Claude Julien about this at some point, but I wanted to ask Dominic Ducharme if he thought, you know, the Canadiens practiced at the Bell Center on Thursday. And when you go to a practice at the Bell Center, you realize how rarely the Canadiens practice in that building. The only time they're there is to play. And with the amount of time, you know, with how little time they're allowed to spend at the arena under the current protocols, you know, they're barely ever at the Bell Center. You know, it's basically they spend no time in that building. And so how much of a home building does it actually feel like? So I was just wondering if Ducharme, you know, would want to thought that they should maybe practice more often at the Bell Center, maybe do morning skates there or something like that. He didn't seem to think so. And it comes back to what we started with, is that, you know, the home and road disparity with this team, which has existed for a while and, you know, could be argued has existed since the Canadiens opened the Brossard facility to a certain extent. Yeah, maybe not that long, but anyhow, it's definitely a thing with this team, and he came back to, you know, just creating the consistency in their game, having the automatic reads, having the automatic second nature aspect of their game apply at home and on the road, just like you want it to apply from game to game, from period to period. It shouldn't matter what the venue is either, but, you know, it's definitely a thing where home ice is very meaningless to the Canadiens, and probably, but it was also interesting to hear today that all four playoff bound teams as it stands today have better records on the road than they do at home this mm-hmm. season. Yeah. So the Canadiens are hardly alone.
Yeah. But I think that there's a very technical or logistical aspect, should I say, when it comes to the Canadiens using the Bell Center more, is that they're sharing that building with the Laval Rocket this year. And with all the sanity measures to clean up, et cetera, there are a lot of logistics going into it to manage the use of the building by two different sets of guys. So I think that somewhere that might come into play. But yeah, I mean, on more broader spectrum, I think that the home ice advantage is now, it's not to be neglected, but it's mainly down to being able to sleep in your bed after the game. So being in your stuff, being able to go back to your family in between practices and games, which is certainly not something to be neglected, because, you know, a team leaves and they're out on the road for 8 or 9 days. It can bear a heavy to always just do the shuttle between the hotel room and the rink. Whereas at home, at least you have a bit more of a oxygen for the soul and the brain. So, but yeah, it hasn't been something that's been so prevalent, except for teams, as I said, like the Vegas Golden Knights, the Pittsburgh Penguins, or the New York Islanders, who have been very dominating in that way. Look, the Canadiens, we started the show by talking about the fact that they were. They're hunting the Winnipeg Jets. If they win against the Winnipeg Jets on Friday night, they'll come 4 points behind them. They're being chased by the Calgary Flames, who are also 4 points behind. And I just wanted to take a quick look at the Calgary Flames, and you can make that my Heritage Minute for this week. But when you look at the the Calgary Flames. Of course, they will need to go on a serious tear to catch up with the Canadiens, even if their schedule is very advantageous to them. But they've played only 500 hockey under Daryl Sutter, and it wouldn't seem like it when the way they play against the Canadiens, because that shutdown type of hockey, even more than what the Canadiens would hope to do in the playoffs, and that they've been practicing under Daryl Sutter, has been so effective against Montreal, has not been that effective against other teams. So it's really striking. And when you look at guys, you know, like even Matthew Tkachuk, who should be like really their offensive leader on that team, he hasn't been nearly the same under Daryl Sutter. And you know, Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, guys that whose play seems to have dipped steadily in the last couple of years, it's concerning also for them. So it's going to be interesting to see, because we all talk about the pressure that Marc Bergevin is under right now, but Brad Treliving has been the general manager of that team in Calgary since the 2014-15 season. And Daryl Sutter is their fifth coach already in 7 years. Fifth coach. And they've had two playoff wins, and that includes the play-in that they won last year. So that's very, very little to be happy about. So are they... So it's one thing to say, well, the Canadians, you know, they play like garbage, and there's no way that they'll be able to hold on to their spot. But the pressure also is on the Flames to be able to play some good hockey enough to be able to catch them. And their track record doesn't suggest that they will be able to do it.
Well, it doesn't help that they've lost Noah Hanifin for the season, right? He got injured in that game against the Canadians. And so their defense, you know, I think their top four was pretty solid when they had Hanifin with Anderson, and then with Tanev and Giordano. Pretty good top four. Now without Hanifin, that's a big loss. That makes their top four a lot less. It actually makes their defense very similar to what kind of the Canadians had in the playoffs last year, where you had, you know, quote unquote big three, even though I think that was, you know, that was sort of a misplaced use of that term.
Yeah.
But you know, that creates that dynamic on the Flames defense, and the way they play, they need a strong defense. They need a strong blue line to play that style. And so, you know, that hurts them as well. But by the same token, you look at the Jets. So, you know, let's look for our Heritage Minute. We're going to look at the team behind the Canadiens and the team ahead of them and the team that they're playing on Friday. So if you're listening to this on Saturday or Sunday or Monday, we apologize. But this team, the Winnipeg Jets, are going through somewhat of what Dominique Ducharme described about the Canadiens when Brendan Gallagher was hurt in terms of an identity crisis. Just in the last little while, you had Paul Stastny come out after the game and say several players on the team are cheating the game. Paraphrasing, you know, but that's he used the word cheat, which basically means cheating the game. So he's like, you know, it's not just one or two guys. There's a lot of guys right now who are taking shortcuts. You saw Mark Scheifele getting benched in a game. Because there are, how did Paul Maurice word it? But, you know, again, I'm going to paraphrase, but basically that there are certain principles that are non-negotiable. There are certain things that they just cannot permit. He didn't get into more detail about it. Mark Scheifele said he didn't like it, but that they've moved on, and that's fine. Message sent, fine. There's a lot of stuff going on with that team. A very talented team, and one that I think would give the Canadians a lot of trouble in a playoff series, because I feel like if the Canadians play what their optimal playoff style would be, that's a team that is kind of built to take it, I think. You know, big, heavy team, lots of skill up front. You know, they lose Nick Ehlers for the rest of the regular season. That's a big blow for them. So there's a lot of stuff, you know, it's easy to get stuck in the Canadians bubble and sort of look only at this one, you know, train wreck-like team, which is the Canadians, but you know, the Jets are right there, you know. Yeah. I mean, the Jets have issues right now, and so it's gonna be it actually might turn into a bit of a race. And I honestly think, you know, the Canadians, I mentioned earlier that they should be motivated to try and catch the Jets to face the Oilers in the first round, because they've played well against the Oilers this year.
That's a good point. Very good point.
But by the same token, there's the other aspect of it where if they're locked into fourth, they can rest their guys. So maybe that is the worst thing that could happen, is that they actually stay in the race to catch Winnipeg, because then they won't be able to rest their guys. So anyhow, but my point being is that if Calgary looks like a team that is unlikely to catch the Canadiens, kind of no matter what the Canadiens do, I think if the Canadiens are able to figure something out here starting Friday night, the Jets seem like a team that's catchable right now. And
are you surprised that they didn't go after anybody on defense that's not named Jordy Benn, but that didn't acquire?
Well, I think they went after. Yeah, I think Jordy Benn was like plan E.
Yeah, yeah.
For them. Yeah. Now, so they had to get someone. But, you know, I mean, sometimes that's the problem with the trade deadline, is if you're sticking on guys that you feel, you know, will be available, and then suddenly circumstances change, prices change. I think that happened to the Canadiens too, frankly. Like, I don't think Erik Gustafsson was their plan A. I think he was also their plan B or C or D even, you know. I mean, they had something on the go.
Yeah, they had plan D.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. But they wound up with plan D, much the way the Jets did. So am I surprised? No, because this happens, you know, like this, if they were in for like, you know, if the Jets were trying to make like a hockey deal, let's say, or not a non-rental trade, like let's say where they were trying to go out and get a defenseman with term on his contract, and that they would be sending some assets back that are less future oriented, let's say, you know, that's a complicated trade to make in season with cap issues and whatever. It wouldn't be hard to see why that fell through. Should the Jets have put themselves in that position, like the Canadiens, to that they're waiting on the last day before making the deal? Probably not, because I think the Jets' needs on defense were a little higher than the Canadiens' needs. But so surprised? I don't know. I mean, when they arrived at deadline day not having done what they needed to do, no, I'm not surprised, because this happens on deadline day where teams are forced to make a desperate trade at the last second, without always thinking of the cap and call-up ramifications that come with that. Wink, wink.
just yeah, before the deadline. Especially in a year like this one. I mean, it's totally understandable. Yeah. So many teams were handcuffed and wish they could have done something, but really were not in a position to do so. And I think trade deadline activity was at an all-time low this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So yes. Surprised? No, but they probably should have been more proactive in the week leading up to the deadline than they were, you know, and maybe a bit more aggressive. Like, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff has shed the reputation of his name, meaning Cheveldayoff, meaning he takes the day off and doesn't make any trades, which is what he kind of became in Winnipeg, because he didn't make a trade like his first, I don't know how many years as GM of the Jets, but since the Jets were in Winnipeg, I think it took him years before he made a player for player trade. But he's made some very aggressive trades since then, including this season, trading Laine for Dubois, which was a pretty big coup for him, considering everyone knew Laine wanted out. But yeah, it's in this instance, I think the need for a defenseman was well known widely across the league. They were involved in some of the biggest names that were out there. A lot of them got removed from the market. You know, remember, for the longest time, they were linked to Mattias Ekholm before the Predators played themselves back into the playoff race. So not surprised, but, you know, if I'm a Jets fan, I'm pretty disappointed that that's all they got. But anyhow, that's the situation. And if you're a Canadiens fan, you're pretty happy that they didn't improve the defense, because it does give them a slight opportunity to move into a spot where they can maybe face the Oilers in the first round. Just before wrapping up this week, we want to get to a voicemail that we received. This is regarding the subject of the day, or of the week, I guess, around Montreal, in the sense that Patrick Waugh has taken on.
Yeah, there's more than one subject of the week this week.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the big ones in Montreal, especially is Patrick Waugh, you know, retaining the services of Neil Glassberg, who's an agent for many NHL coaches, assistant coaches, general managers, front office types. You know, he actually reached out to Patrick Waugh to see if there would be any interest, and then went on a publicity campaign, basically trying to get Patrick Waugh's name out there as much as he could. And obviously that had a reaction in Montreal. So let's listen to Jake from Chicago, who has a question about that.
With all these stories about Patrick Waugh potentially coming in as a GM to replace Bergevin, it makes me wonder why we still don't have a president of hockey operations. Not to say that I'd even want Bergevin to stay if they hired someone on top of him, but it wouldn't necessarily bother me for Waugh to come in that kind of a role. Anyways, thanks a lot. But
yeah, that's interesting.
It's quite it's quite the endorsement. It wouldn't necessarily bother me. That's what you really love that. You can really feel the enthusiasm. But good question, Jake, and thanks for listening. In Chicago, I miss Chicago.
Oh,
I'd like to go back there one day. So, you know, it's hard not to get the impression that as long as Jeff Molson is the owner, this principal owner of this team, and technically the president of the team, that he's willing to relinquish that job. He's made it quite clear. He's come out and made a statement on that when, I believe it was Régent Tremblay in the Journal de Montréal, speculating on Vincent Damphousse becoming president of hockey operations for this team.
June of last year.
That was in June of last year. That was the first time he had spoken ever since the pandemic hit, so since March. But, you know, his statement was quite clearly sort of geared to refuting that notion that they're going to hire a president of hockey operations. So I don't think, and Jeff has always maintained, and he's not wrong, Jeff Molson has always said, if you look around the league, this position is actually pretty rare. So why should we do it when there are only a handful of president of hockey operations positions that exist in the NHL?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you look around, the title president of hockey operations, there's only two teams around the league that have a president of a hockey operation. So you got Brian Burke, that was named in season with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And you got George McPhee, who used to be the GM in Vegas. Now he's been promoted to president of hockey ops. And his assistant, Kelly McCrimmon, has become the GM. But those are the only two. You got guys, you got president of teams that are like true hockey guys, Cam Neely in Boston, Luc Robitaille in LA, Brendan Shanahan in Toronto, John Davidson with the Rangers, Bob Nicholson in Edmonton. But for the most part, on most teams, the president, well, you got teams where the GM is also president, but in a lot of cases, the president, the team presidents, they handle the business side of things. So and they don't, and there's just no president of hockey operations. So you're right when you said that. You know, Jeff Molson put himself as president of the team when he became the majority owner. That was now what, 9 years ago. And in those 9 years, he grew up in that role. So in order for him to go out and get a president of operations, it would mean that he would recognize that he's no longer qualified, or never has been in the first place, to be in that, to do that job, or that he needs someone to act as a cushion between him and the general manager. So I don't think this is going to happen. And if it were to happen, I don't think that it would be with Patrick Roy either, for a number of reasons. Patrick Roy is an alpha male. He's a guy who wants to be in charge, and the president of hockey operations is more of an advisor to a certain extent. He might rubber stamp the final decisions, and everything might go through him, but it's not necessarily the one that's got the most hands on. And if we remember why Patrick Roy left the Colorado Avalanche in the first place, it was because for him, being head coach of the Avalanche was not enough because he wanted to have a say also in the hockey operations. He wants to be involved at every level, and that's what he get. That's what he can do with the Quebec Ramparts. So would he get the chance to have that much leverage, that much leeway with the Montreal Canadiens? I really doubt it. I think that's what's more likely to happen is that if a change is needed, there's Jeff Molson would simply replace Marc Bergevin with another GM.
Yeah, that's really what the next few weeks are going to determine. You know, I mean, honestly, you know, you rarely see a GM's fate being this closely tied to how a team finishes and a season and performs in the postseason. But if the Canadians sort of back their way into the playoffs and get totally smoked by the Maple Leafs in the first round, I don't see a scenario under which Marc Bergevin would be retained. I mean, would he be allowed to enter the final year of his contract as a lame duck GM? Maybe. Usually teams don't do that, but it's possible. But I would think that with 1 year left on his contract, he'd be up for an evaluation this summer, and that a lot of that evaluation is going to be based on how this team plays over the next few weeks. That's just the reality. I think there's some benefit of the doubt that's been given to Bergevin in the sense of what we talked about off the top, that he built this team for the playoffs. So let's see it in the playoffs. If they get to the playoffs and show that not only were they not built for the regular season, they were also not built for the playoffs, or they just underperform, or they just look bad in losing to the Maple Leafs, then Jeff Molson's decision is probably made a little easier. If they are competitive against the Maple Leafs, if they push them to 7 games or 6 games and still lose, what happens then? I don't know. But there's definitely something's going to be evaluated after the season. Jeff Molson has always leaned towards stability over change, but Marc Bergevin's been here for 9 years. Jeff Molson's been here for 12, by the way. I had to look it up when you mentioned that, but it's already been 12 years, as crazy as that is.
Oh, you're right. That's 2009. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 9 years is I know that Bergevin is ever, a lot of people say, oh, well, after 9 years, what has he done? You know, I evaluate Bergevin from 2017 to now. And even then, he's done a lot of good things. I think he's done more good things than bad things since 2017. But even then, that's a good amount of time to get a reset off the ground and to create a competitive team, which I think, in theory, he's done. But, you know, an argument can also be made that as opposed to building a competitive team, what he's done is acquired good players. And that maybe they don't form the best team. And that maybe that's and I think it could be argued that throughout Bergevin's time, that's been his issue, is linking moves together so that they work together and create a cohesive whole as a team. Because over his time, you often look at his trades, you're like, wow, that was a good trade. And you say, in theory, if you make good trade after good trade after good trade after good trade, you should have a good team. It just seems that most of his moves just seem somewhat disjointed and haven't been able to come together and form the cohesive team you would expect. And maybe that's somewhat to be expected this year because of how many people were brought in and how, you know, condensed schedule, you don't get to hang out. You don't get to have like regular meetings. Nothing's normal. Maybe it's harder for this team to become a team under the current circumstances, but I think everyone, myself included, and I think you as well, really liked Marc Bergevin's offseason. Thought it was really good. And yeah. I thought, even in season, I didn't mind the Eric Staal trade. I thought it was a good trade. It hasn't worked out the way maybe people expected. I still think it has time to work out the way Marc Bergevin expected. But I didn't think it was a bad trade. There were some issues on deadline day that I don't agree with and that created a whole bunch of unnecessary headaches, but I think by and large, he's done a pretty good job, but the results just aren't there. So,
no, it's just that the team is not the sum of all its parts. You know,
well, that's it. But I feel like that's often been the case in his time.
Yeah.
That there's all these good moves that you think are good moves, and they just don't work in, they don't work with each other. They don't They don't combine to form a cohesive team, and I think that's kind of what we're seeing this season.
So yeah, so I don't think there's going to be a president of hockey operations, but I think that new blood in any way, somebody a fresh perspective, whether it be an advisor to Jeff Molson or whatnot, but bringing somebody new at management level, no matter what happens in the coming weeks, would be a welcome addition.
They should do what we suggested. They should hire a director of innovation and hockey research.
Yeah.
And hockey research and development. That would be the position I would create. Director of innovation and hockey research and development.
Exactly. Be avant-garde, you know?
Again. Yeah. Do something, you know, set the pace for once. Show an example. Like, be innovative. So if I was to add a layer to the management scheme, that would be that. And it would just be someone who could maybe counter the hockey operations department, which is a very old school, you know, played the game kind of department, and have just another side of it. So you can have a yin and yang in the front office. That would be my suggestion.
And that's not just analytics. It's just looking outside the box, finding new ideas. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like what Pierre Allard is already doing for them, but just expanding it to other areas other than sports science and strength and conditioning, which is, you know, basically what he's limited to, even though he does work on the analytics side for them somewhat, but creating a whole R&D wing of the front office is what I would do. And I think it would be far more impactful than just hiring a president of hockey ops.
Yeah, for sure. Because that person would be on always under scrutiny, and people would be waiting for the day that he would actually replace the GM. So
yeah, you know, exactly. So, but I think, you know, something behind the scenes, making the Canadians a more modern team, more modern organization is the way to go.
Absolutely. Have a good game tonight, Arpin. Have a good game, everybody. There's going to be a few until we speak again next week for Le Super Athletique. But in the meantime, if you want to read our articles, we referred to a few that that we've written lately. But if you want to read our stuff, you can subscribe to The Athletic by going and use one of the a discount that's offered to the listeners of The Athletic support. All you got to do is go to theathletic.com/athletic support. So that's theathletic.com/athletic support. And you're going to get a discount on the first year of your subscription. So be sure to jump on that offer and become part of a growing community of readers of The Athletic. So if you're fans of the NFL, there's tons to read this morning about the NFL draft and so on and so on. So there's plenty to read. Thank you so much. Thanks, Arpin. Take care of yourself, buddy.
All right. Thanks, man. Bye, everyone.